Campus FM presents My Pizza and Toffee Apples in the 1950s. Produced and presented by Patricia Salomone.
In the long, quiet evenings before the advent of television, my father listened to the BBC News and my mother played Chopin on our piano. Her music drifted out through the open windows into the dark summer nights, lit up only here and there by the dim lights in the British military barracks opposite our home. I completely lost sight of you, my friend Roy, on Christmas Day. But that was one day only. Otherwise, Christmas holidays were together time for you and me. Christmas holidays were frequently blessed with fine weather. You were back from St. Edward's College, and I free from St. Joseph's School. So we were as free as the wind. We could roll down Drugwood Street on our roller skates. "No cars," I would shout, as you let go and sped down the sloping street, all the way down till you turned round the corner and disappeared at quiz, where the flat surface helped you to come to a halt. Those roller skates cost us quite a few bruises and grazed knees, and cost her time and patience sewing patches over the tartan trousers she had sewn for me and which I kept tearing at the knees. Were the Christmas holidays. We were free to roam about, to slide down and then climb up the shaggy slopes leading to the Quissisana Road rocks, or race up and down the hill to Aridoot on our roller skates. This was forbidden ground, not by the military this time, but by our mothers, because there was no railing along the low wall, and it was quite dangerous for kids on wheels. Amongst the Quissisana kids, there were one or two who did fall over that wall, but were miraculously only slightly hurt, and none the better for it. From then on, they earned themselves the nickname of Humpty Dumpty. Rainy days meant taking our car numbers for hours and hours. And, this I preferred, hours of painting on blank pages with the beautiful colouring pencils she bought for us. You joined my sister and me at the green table in our bedroom. Daniela's little chubby hand flowed freely as she painted pretty red-roofed houses on green hills, le casette that our Italian mummy spoke of. There were snow on the mountain tops and white clouds in the blue skies where swallows flew, birds we had never seen in true life. I struggled, trying so hard to come up with some acceptable design. But my kid sister's hand was far more gifted. Here, too, she was better than I. More like our mother, who was gifted in every form of art. another bout of high temperature and yet another course of penicillin, I would see her slim hands working in the dim light. Those loving hands moved fast, creating hills and valleys, paths and bridges. They molded columns of rock and little houses in the distance. The Three Kings' castle was perched far, far away on the hill in the distance, and their caravan of camels was placed along the path leading down to the blessed grotto under the tiny star. Hosts of angels hung on a string above the flocks of sheep which crowded the entrance to the grotto with its little manger. A pot of water and flour bubbled over the paraffin Aladdin lamp, the gluey smell mingling with that of paraffin, while in the warm, damp air she created the papier-mâché crib, il presepe, as she knew it back in her Italian home. She sang quietly as she worked, her voice and the warmth of my bed cover creating the Christmas magic of the room. Special moments, being ill was a privilege. With half-closed eyes, I watched her blonde head as she bent over creating a new masterpiece every year. It was a homemade work of art, modelled with the utensils and materials available at home. Shoeboxes, flour, newspapers, lime colours from the ironmongers, cotton wool and tinfoil. There was a tinfoil waterfall and a lake where a washerwoman washed the holy babe's clothes and hung them on a string by the grotto below the hosts of angels. Next, she painted a dark blue sky and fixed a big silver star made out of cigarette tinfoil. Finally, she sprayed white snowflakes of flour through her old kitchen colander. And at last, on Christmas night, before bedtime, my little sister would cradle the babe in her chubby hands and guide our own private procession, when we knew that the babe would bless our home. So loving, so warm, so intimate, the four of us followed each other through the four rooms of our home to lay the babe in the grotto. E scendi l'una grotta al freddo al gelo. Then, little Mark would come and visit. Oh, Auntie Amna, see the star, he would shout with glee, and his in his destructive hand would stretch out to touch the tinfoil star. Half the crib statuette stumbled down. The shepherd and his flock fell on the bridge. The star fell onto the mountain, killing the three kings, as they made their way with their caravan on camels. Naughty boy, don't touch! Naughty boy. Put your hands on the ledge. The older boys would bully him and stamp on his little hands with their football boots. Why don't you play football? He was always happy to play with us. To him, we were as sisters. When his little sister really did come, it was quite unexpected. For so many years, he had been his mummy's one and only little boy, and she had sewn him his shorts from the linen cuttings in her father's shop. Her name was Emma. Emma loved Anna. They were two of a sort. Sometimes she bought my mother cuttings of linen out of which she made elegant outfits, skirts, blouses. The two friends shared their love for Italy. Together, at the top of their voices, they sang the forbidden songs of the Ventennio. With peroxide blonde hair, wasped in waists and big round skirts, new look style, they would take us three kids everywhere. We laughed and giggled and felt embarrassed, as kids do when their mums attract attention. Sunny winter's afternoon, they walked all the way from Quiz to the Chisk Brewery in the limits of Hamroon. In those days, the large white brewery that was to become the symbol of Malta's renaissance stood alone in the countryside, surrounded by green fields. Emma pushed skinny little Mark, but my poor mother had a much harder time. Daniela was a rather rounded little two-year-old. I, at five, was a big girl, but still too young to walk all the way. So she pushed the two of us on the rickety pushchair. The day after, exhausted, she was ill and ran a high temperature.
Hey! Hey, Mambo! Mambo Italiano! Hey, Mambo! Mambo Italiano! Go, go, go! You messed up Siciliano! All you calabrese to the Mambo like a crazy whip. Hey, Mambo! Don't wanna tarantella! Hey, Mambo! No more mozzarella, hey Mambo, Mambo Italiano, trying and salata with the fish.
Picnicking at the cot door one hot summer's day, Emma and Anna danced the Mambo, their raffia earrings swinging to the rhythm, their white skirts swaying and swirling, the men around ooing and aahing, and they laughing, their beautiful red lips parted, young white teeth sparkling.
Hello, pussy, did you get a happy in the fits when you mambo Italiano?
As children often do, we blushed, feeling embarrassed by our young mother's exuberance. Sicilia, this was the first step to her home. Summer was not the best time to be together, Roy. They took me away. And although I missed you for the first few days or so, you were soon forgotten, lost as I was in the charms of Italia.
Hey, Oompa! I love how you dance, rumba. But it's a mother by Spizano. Learn how to mambo. If you're gonna be a scrap.
Every year after the school exams were over, my father kept the promise he made on his wedding day to his father-in-law. He took my mother back to her homeland and family. So every year during the holidays, with the Star of Malta, we sailed off on our great adventure. Off towards our glorious summers in Taranto. No key at Valletta for the ship to tie alongside, only slim coloured dicers bobbing up and down, going to and fro across the harbour. Though born on the sea, she could not swim, and was terrified lest her bambine would fall off the shallow side of the boat.
Dad sat there, secure and solid, holding on to the suitcases, but she clutched her bambine,
just to make sure. Did the crossing during the night, and at sunrise, "Capo passero," he would say, as he peeped through the porthole, and she, "Oh, l'Italia," every time, year in, year out, throughout our childhood, as we grew from innocent infancy to the awareness of womanhood, and her blonde hair grew gray streaks. From then on, we begin our trudge up the coast of Sicily and the many hours' journey to her home. We would travel along the eastern coast of Sicily with the sea on our right and the orange groves and vineyards of Etna on our left. We shared the old train compartment with different folk. Young sailors on their way to commission in Messina or Taranto. They smelt of Nazionale cigarettes and starched uniforms and were ever so handsome to my little girl's eyes. Peasant woman, black-clad and dark-eyed, travelled on their way to Barcelona. I asked, was that in Spain? But no, of course, that was the village in Sicily. They carried baskets full of homemade food, which they would share with us, their fellow travellers. Stuffed pigeons, fresh bread and homemade cheese and salami. In a low voice they spoke of Il Bandito Giuliano, who to me sounded like some highwayman of times gone by. Yet, Portella delle Ginestre was only recent history. And the man's deeds and misdeeds, all the drama of his life and death, were contemporary to my coming into this strange world, modern and archaic, struggling for an identity, poor, broken, but oh so full of hope. The train moved at a snail's pace up along the sun-drenched coast. At times it ran so close to the sea that you could smell the salt in the air and wish you could run across the black lava sand and dive into the blue, blue water. It choo-chooed over bridges spanning over dry riverbeds and past bewildered drivers in small Fiat cars or astride their Vespas, waiting their turn at the railway barriers. Il Miracolo Italiano was about to explode, but the old, cold-riven train skirted villages where little naked boys ran chasing one another in the sun-blanched streets, dwarfed by mighty Etna, blowing black smoke signals and spitting red-hot lava. It stopped at the little stations, where the aroma of Italian coffee delighted the senses, and the shout of "Arancini! Arancini!" made our mouths water. We had to wait, Daddy would say, until we were on the traghetto, the ferry boat between Scilla and Charybdis. In the meantime, "Guardate i faraglioni," she would say. They were big boulders there, thrown by Polifemo, il gigante da un occhio solo, the one-eyed giant, who had been blinded by sly Ulysses. The giant was furious because Ulysses had tricked him and managed to escape, taking his men to safety. Ulysses's men squeezed grape juice from the vines growing along Etna's slopes, and while the wicked giant was in the throes of Bacchus, had blinded him and made for their boats. In his wrath, the giant had hurled the boulders at them while they made their escape, laughing at him and cheering their leader. Ecco, eccola, there they stand, to this very day, and we are lucky to be able to see them, for we are children of the Mediterraneo, children of Magna Grecia, and of Roma Imperiale. We listened wide-eyed and intent, for only she told us these tales, and we so loved her for it. As the train thudded slowly through Messina harbour towards the quay, we eagerly looked out of its windows, stretching our necks to look out for a lovely Maltese lady, Charlotte, who had married her Sicilian sweetheart. Every year she would come to the station just to watch us go past and wave, shouting, "Ciao, Anna! Have you seen my mother?" Her nostalgia for Malta and her dear ones was as acute as my mother's was for Italy. So there was between the two of them a closeness, an understanding that bound them in a warm friendship. When the train slowly boarded the ferry boat marked FS Ferrovie Statali, we were told not to lean out of the train windows. Pericolo! Obedient and a little awed, we held back the curiosity to see how a train so long and heavy could get onto a boat. Would it be too heavy? Would the boat sink and take us down with it to the bottom of the sea, where monsters with snakes in their hair would be waiting? Once the train hissed to a halt, we were allowed to alight. Giddy, excited, and a little frightened, for all seemed big, noisy, and strange. The smell of fuel and the slow marine movement caused some nausea. Anxious and a little seasick, our hands held firmly in hers, we followed our father up the steep steps, and then suddenly we were on the ship's bridge, out in the blinding light and in the crisp air, taking in the pungent sea breeze and the astonishing view. Scylla and Charybdis would blow hard on the waves and work up a storm, she would say. They had snakes for hair, and they were a sailor's nightmare. Intrigued and fascinated, we looked across the sea to the mountains in the distance. The ferry boat, with its load of heavy trains, moved towards Il Continente, and the expectations and excitement grew.
Sole alla valle, sole alla collina.
Sitting on the hard wooden bench, our feet dangling off the ground, it was time to bite into the delicious arancini. The mozzarella cheese would ooze out at every bite, and we ate and observed the universe around us. Sicily, with its fuming giant fast receding, as we sailed past the Madonnina in Messina harbour, and Reggio di Calabria's lungomare getting gradually closer across the deep blue water. The voices around us were different. We heard unusual dialects that we failed to understand, and even saw women in strange dress, colourful, embroidered skirts and aprons. They were the ethnic Albanians who resided in pockets of land in Sicily's Piana degli Albanesi, but also in parts of Calabria and Puglia.
Man incallite ormai senza speranza.
Many people, mostly young men, poorly dressed and travelling with cardboard suitcases, brought out their meal of bread and cheese and ate, looking sadly back towards their receding Ireland home. They had left wives and children and were going north on Il Continente towards the industrial north, where they would be the backbone on which Fiat and others would make their fortunes. Post-war emigration was rife, the bolder going far across the oceans. Many other labourers left their rural lands to earn their living in the factories of Germany, the coal mines of France and Belgium, where tragedies like Marcinelle were hardly mentioned, not to discourage the much-needed workforce for the resurrection and the reconstruction of Europe.
Addio, addio.
It was a holiday journey, but needless to say, it was also a learning experience, never to be forgotten, by two little girls from Malta. I invite you to come and join me on the train journey up the toe of Italy next week.